Now recording.
Welcome back to episode 82. FAA remote ID is nigh. And servos part two for real this time.
Oh, you're doing it today?
Was that?
You're doing the intro today?
Well, I just did. Joe, good morning.
Fair enough.
Good afternoon, good evening, wherever the heck you
good
are.
Good evening.
Whatever time you're listening.
Yes, good evening. I am sitting here sweating in my garage because we'll talk about it a little bit, but the man cave is still under construction, so.
Nice. All right. Yeah, we will talk about it. So, yeah, our topic today, you're here with Matt here. That's me and Joe. Joe, say hi.
You are so awkward.
Yeah, that's me. That's why everybody listens. They're like, gosh, this is so cringy. Yeah. Anyway, we're here together to talk about our finish up our discussion on servos that we started a couple weeks back. And we had a couple issues that we couldn't quite get back to it, but now we are. We'll finish that out. We'll update everybody on, we're recording this on the 5th of September, 2023, which means in almost a little over a week, by the time this comes out, it'll almost be exactly a week, the FAA remote ID regulation that affects all of the hobbyists is going to come into effect, where basically if you're not in a FRIA, you're going to be required to have a remote ID unit. And it's only about a week away. Yay. So we're going to talk about the effects of that, what's happening and what might not be happening and all that stuff and who's all up and in arms and how you can, most importantly, kind of where, you know, one of the ways you might be able to kind of look at this situation and get through it without having to stress so much and still enjoy the hobby. And I think that's really the big part. So I think, and don't forget, we also have a couple clips left, right? From Flight
Fest.
We do. So we'll have that.
I think what we'll do is we'll do our sort of beginning section, talk about what we've been up to and what we got going on, and then we can jump into, I don't know how many we have left, but I know we've got a couple, so we'll play roughly half of what we got, and then we'll kind of go into our main discussions, and then we'll mostly close it out with the rest, and then we'll outro out, and we'll use up the last of the Flight Fest audio that we had, because I think the last two or three episodes we hadn't used any, just with my stuff being up in the air. So
that's it. Yep. Yeah, once we got to the end of last time's discussion, I was like, oh my gosh, we talked all the time.
You and Brian talked for a long time.
I love talking to Brian. He's always a welcome.
Oh, he's good people.
Yeah, he's good people. I feel like it was mostly on topic too. So I feel like hopefully everybody enjoyed it. Let us know if you what you thought about it. I know we had a couple people respond, and we appreciate the feedback.
Complaints to Matthew at aviationrcnew.com.
as it is, or in our Discord. As it is, all, honestly, feedback is always a gift. We really appreciate it. And then basically, then we're going to talk about our journey. So why don't we get into that right now?
Sure. You want me to go ahead and go?
Go for it, bud. What have we been up to?
I don't know what you've been up to, because you and I really haven't talked much lately.
No, it's radio silence. No, we're just been busy. Yep.
Yeah. So I don't remember where I left off with discussions last time, but I've got everything out of the man cave, and my wife is loving that the man cave is now encompassing the entire house.
Yep. I think that's about where we left off. You had just kind of gotten everything out, but you hadn't done any of the rework, because there's a lot of your project scope was far bigger than just pull everything out, clean it, and put it back.
Yeah. Yeah, so
where are you at?
Everything was out. I've got the ceiling scraped, so I had popcorn ceiling.
Oh, right. Yikes.
And actually, so without spending too much time on it, but my neighbor was also in the past scrubbing some popcorn off the ceiling, and he went at it the hard way,
which
was to just go up there with a putty knife and just go at it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what did you learn from that, and what did
you
do?
Oh, no, I knew the trick or figured it out really quick the first time. He didn't ask me.
Okay, fair enough.
So for anybody who's going to get popcorn off your ceiling, assuming that the popcorn has not been painted,
you can
spray it with water and give it a couple minutes and then go at it with a putty knife. And because the popcorn on your ceiling is basically sheetrock mud
that
has been, like, had big chunks put in it to give it that popcorn effect. It's just sprayed up there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not exactly sheetrock mud, but similar kind of thing.
Right.
And so you just take a spray bottle and put it on the streamer mode and just... And I find hot water works better.
Well,
not
sure,
much,
yeah.
Just, you know, it's hot water, so it does its thing a little faster. And I'll do a 5-foot by 5-foot square shooting the ceiling of water. And give it a couple minutes to soak in, and I shoot heavy, just put up plenty of water, and then I go up with a 6-inch putty knife and just scrape it off. Now, that'll get you pretty much across the board to the sheetrock that's above it. The problem there is, then you save in the scraping department, but you have to make up for in to get a slick ceiling, which I did not put the effort into in the man cave. You need to go back and do skim coats with your with your sheetrock mud.
Yep.
In the master bedroom, I did that. In the man cave, in the interest of getting this project done, I scraped it off. I sanded in some of the divots where they had driven nails and the popcorn got in there.
Yep.
And sort of major nasty areas, I touched up a little bit with mud and I moved on. So there's freckling, there's pockmarking. Less than ideal, but
Is this something you can live with?
Oh, it's something I can live with.
Okay.
You know, it's definitely something I can live with to not spend 2 extra weeks in there working that ceiling, because that's how long it would take me, let's be
real.
Right,
yeah. It's a lot.
Yeah, and it's not the most enjoyable work to spread mud on a ceiling and then have to sand it, and dust is everywhere. And again, it's just the man cave. In the master bedroom, I wanted it right. In the man cave, I'm trying to get it done.
I gotcha.
So, if you need to take popcorn off a ceiling, spray it, and then go back with your putty knife. So popcorn's been cleaned off, the ceiling's been painted. Turns out there was wallpaper, or there is wallpaper in the man cave that's been painted over.
Yep.
And I both fought my instincts and gave up on trying to get wallpaper off the walls in there, because it had some very, like, that old paper thin flower wallpaper.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got to paper tiger that, and even then, it's still a lot of effort.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then there's a banner strip that runs around the top that's been painted over, so I got some of that off, but I was like, I'm making more work for myself, so I mudded over and kind of sanded and blended to get rid of the areas I was working on, and then I went to paint. So I got the carpet ripped out, the padding under the carpet, the tack strips, because I'm on a slab house, so that was nailed into the concrete. I've got the walls primed, not painted yet, but primed. And learn from my mistakes.
Do as I say, not as I do.
If you are doing, really, anytime you're painting, I don't get messed up by paint bad, because paint's not terribly fumey. It's got a bit of a smell to it, but it's not, you know, terrible. I use Kilt's primer, which is a heavy-duty oil-based primer.
Ooh. Yeah, that's to cover all the things.
that's to cover all the things. And while it's not needed in every application, the man cave needed it. And gotcha. It is super fumey, and yep. I did not open any ventilations.
Oh, because
I never really have in the past.
What are you trying to figure out how to get high the old-fashioned way? Come on.
I was high as five kites.
I bet you were. You're probably oxygen and starved and all sorts of other. Anyway,
it was not desirable. And so I eventually ended up opening up some windows in the house, and that wasn't moving it out fast enough. And so I set up a box fan in the window to just take it straight out and pull fresh air throughout the house from other areas and into that room.
Right.
It was continuing to off gas overnight. And so I still had to, leave the central cooling system off and the fan in the window. And I was not feeling 100% when I was done with that. So, learn from mistakes and take precautions. If you're doing that kind of stuff with a paint or primer that's got fumes to it, go ahead before you get started. Open a window, get a fan set up, get some ventilation, because it is really, really bad for you. It can be kind of a interesting experience, but it's not good. So.
Gotcha.
Moving on from there, what I've got left is I need to finish trimming out the primer in corners and edges, and then I'll move on to paint. I'll put a couple coats of paint on the wall, and hopefully, my original plan was this weekend to be putting flooring in, but the passenger window on my wife's car quit working.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that takes a moment to take it apart.
That's going to take priority.
Yep. Yeah, especially in this heat. Still, it's where we live, it's still hot. I mean, it's not as hot, but it's still hot.
Well, I just found out about it today, so it's not like I've been letting it sit there.
That's good.
She called me when I got off work and told me about it. And so I'll take care of that tomorrow evening.
All right.
And then it'll be moving everything back into the man cave. And we're going to talk about it in a little bit, but I'm hoping to have it done by our next build party. Cool. Everything in there and set up. And if not, then I'll be kind of doing final touches of where I want to put stuff and where I want stuff set mm-hmm. up and things like that during the build party.
Good. Yeah, that sounds like you've been making steady progress. Excellent. Well, apparently took cues from you and decided, the way things are, it needs to be completely different. And so I decided to flip-flop my office and my hobby room. In an effort to, there's a whole things aren't really working the way they are. The dining room ends up being my build surface. There's not any space in the office and just kind of gets cluttered with planes that might fly if I could repair them. Take a couple minutes, get them repaired, right? And that's still the cat selection method where you hold up a cat, whatever one it touches, that's when you fix and fly. It's still there. It's gonna happen because it's also part of it. But I realized all I was using in that room for my office was this big desk and a little side table with a printer on it. Everything else was part of some other stuff that didn't have anything to do with that. And I realized the office space, the hobby space was originally a bedroom, and I kind of needed one of the beds I was taking apart, and I was trying to figure out how I'm going to jockey all the different, half of them gifted, but anyway, whatever. Try to rearrange the space so that I can use the beds, because I'm turning out that I'm needing them more often than I realized. And then I'm like, well, if I move my office up there, there's room for a bed, because I don't need a ton. I only need like half the space for the office. Then I could use a bed, clear everything out, and then I could kind of reuse that space again, actually get to the things and maybe use that to help catalyze getting the kids' play space updated, which is there's like a upstairs, family room kind of deal. But then I'm like, okay, well, how am I going to do this? So we started, it was Labor Day weekend, so we had a long weekend. And my girlfriend, she must love me because she said, oh, I'll help you move things around. And I've got, you know, we've got a couple of teenagers who've got, you know, they're old enough where they've got enough muscle to help, right?
Yeah, because your boys are back, aren't they?
Yeah, the boys are back. So that
was
started.
Logan. I saw over your shoulder earlier, right?
Yeah, it is. Yep, he came in briefly.
He's gotten big.
Wait, are you sure it wasn't? Yeah, yeah, it was probably him. I'm trying to think who it was.
Quinn was still playing because he didn't want. He was getting shy all of a sudden.
All of a sudden, because he's like, I don't know who's looking. But yeah, no, he's getting bigger. They both are growing. Quinn, they both grew by a couple inches. You know, yeah, Quinn is over that giant growth spurt where you're like, who are you? And where did you, you know, did you eat my son? kind of thing. Yeah, so they came back a couple weeks ago. So most of this was, you know, having the kids come back, getting back to school. This is finished their first week. No, second week of school, officially, I think.
Dude, I think the last time you and I talked, like it was the morning of the kids' first day or something.
Yeah. Right. Jeez. Yeah, and I know, and I, again, apologies to the listeners who, Joe and I both kind of half dropped the ball enough where we had to postpone. We ended up postponing a week on releasing the episode we did. We had it kind of ready, but we both just, I think, missed a couple communications and it just took longer. So we're sorry.
You had done the editing run. I just never got back to it.
And same with me. I didn't follow up either. I didn't go, hey, Joe, did you do? Usually we're a little bit more honest. So again, apologize, but it's also the beginning of the year. And both of us are really kind of swamped with doing a bunch of different things. So forgive us if you would. My main rig is tore down.
So
yeah, no, you don't have to. It's all good. You don't have to defend yourself. We're good. I didn't hear anybody crying outrage at the screen or anything like that. I didn't see a dramatic
drop in
listenership.
You didn't see the pitchforks outside of my house.
Yeah, well, maybe not. Anyway, all right. So a lot of this weekend has been, you know, you don't realize when you move things until you move things
how much stuff you have,
much stuff you've squirreled away in places, and how many things like, oh my God, I didn't realize how much of the school papers, you know, like. For like, yeah, I'm pulling out 2016 school papers and I just put aside because I'm like, I don't even know where to put these things. Like, what do I do with this?
Yep.
It was just, you know, boxes and containers and sleeves of this and that. And it's like, oh my God, this, we have to go through this. And it's going to be the same with putting the hobby stuff back. I've got, every time we had an event and I was working on the build table, I'd have to basically sweep a no-no box, move the box out of the room and then do the thing. Whether it be a birthday party or we play D&D or we'd have a game night or something like that. That kitchen table, which was my build table for weeks, would then be cleared off in a hasty fashion, and I've got a box, right? And I've got like 10 of those, so I know I'm going to have to go through all of those and organize them. But the good news is that room that's the office is actually a little bit bigger of a space than the room that was upstairs. Only difference is there's no closet, but I wasn't using the closet. So and it ends up actually being a little bit bigger and probably better fitting space, which is why we ended up doing the flip-flop. So we spent this weekend doing that, moving a desk upstairs and dismantling a really heavy, hefty build table, two of them actually, and dismantling them, bringing them downstairs in pieces, and then reconstructing them as we kind of put them in spaces that are available to set them. I still have one I have to put together and build. But those are there, and I'm still clearing out boxes that we talked about and bring those down into the hobby room. So I'm trying to, like, relocate everything back into the official hobby room once it's all in there. Then I'll get an organizing system onto the dining room table and bring boxes out one at a time and sort. Once I go through all those, then it'll be a matter of putting those away, and I'll actually have a hobby room I might be able to use on a regular for build nights, for building, for videos, for all the things that I want to do with a hobby. So I'm
eager.
And not
feel bad if you need to leave a project half done for a night or two.
Or a week and a half, or whatever it ends up being.
Well,
again,
I was trying to help you out.
No, I appreciate it. No, but that's how it works, though. Like, I know sometimes it just has to be there a while. Because things are taking precedence somewhere else, right? Like, maybe I need to focus on getting a 3D printer running. That's going to take a couple days. I'm not going to be in building a plane when I'm trying to get something printed. So, you know, and that's the other thing is I want to, there's enough space upstairs and I have a very solid old dresser that I want to put the 3D printers on top of. So that way it's hefty. It's not going to move. I have a space that's near where I'm doing my work so I can monitor it during the day.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just doing a thing. And then honestly, when I'm not in there, it's, I don't really care how much of a noise it's making. And it should be good. I think that I'll actually be a really good setup in general. There's a couple things I need for that, but I'm working on those right now. I did end up finishing up the Ansley Peace Drone, the larger version. The Ansley Peace Drone, it's the Experimental Airlines noob tube kind of arm and wing. If you go on YouTube and you look it up, look at those things, and you'll see all these build videos on these really simplistic method of doing essentially what Flight Test does, but in a little bit more aerodynamic way, and yet simpler and kind of uglier way, but it's quick. But it's really quick. Like the wings are more true airfoils, but the fuselages are literally just a tube. I mean, it might as well be a signpost, really.
Like, okay.
It's that beautiful, right? At least like with Flight Test, they try to do the contouring and all that kind of stuff. So they make it look like the plane you're flying. This is just a post with two wings on it, right? So I got a chance to put I had the electronics in, I think, at the end of last episode or something close to it. But I didn't really get a chance to get out and fly it. Or at least I flew it once and I think I missed through it. I didn't get a chance to re-glue the firewall back on. I think over this last time I did that. I put a stabilizer on it, and I finally was able to get out there where I could have somebody give me a toss. That was a real good one, and I hurled it in the air, had all the cameras going. Not that I was FPV, because and it's a good thing, because I have no idea how this thing was going to perform. So I threw it, and I got it up in the air, and I flew it around. And I did, I think, 1.5 loops or 1.5 circuits. And it just, I was kind of coming around. The stabilizer seemed to do some sort of weird, like, quick correction. And then it'll come back. Almost like it was flopping. Uh-huh. Right? I was like, oh, no, what happened? Like, did it come loose? And it didn't. I don't think, because when I, and then as it came around, it did it again. And then it just completely lost control. And it just started to do like a death spiral down to the ground. So the good news was that wasn't terribly fast, but it wasn't terribly gentle, but it did land in the beans. But it was the beans right next to the access path. So it was actually not easy to find because it's in the beans, but I was able to find it. I was able to kind of hear the motor when I clicked it up. I heard it kind of, it kind of pulse it. So I could hear it, which was cool. So I was able to find it, and I realized that the servo arm disconnected because of that little metal connector that you're supposed to, you screw the nut on the one end to the servo control arm.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a set nut in there or something similar to that. Yeah,
they're called linkage stoppers, right?
Right, linkage stoppers. And then they basically pinch that wire. So that nut that held it to the control arm on the control surface wound out and came off,
mm-hmm.
and then the whole thing came off, and so of course it
same thing
control
happened
the
to
plane.
The seven.
Yeah, I freaking hate those things. I really need to just toss them. They do not work for me. You can have them if you want them. You can have them.
I've got enough, and I don't use them very much. But remember, we were having a conversation. So a couple weeks ago, I had an impromptu build night, quote unquote, where I just said, hey, I'm going to be working on the man cave tonight. Y'all come and hang if you want.
Yeah.
And I can't think of the fellow's name. You spent more time with him, but we met him at Flight Fest.
Yeah,
He had the two kids.
Yep.
And he was asking about those.
Squash Moon, I think? No, what was it? Go ahead.
I don't remember. But he was asking about those, or asking about linkages and such. And what I told him, and what I do, and what you may want to do, is take a blob of hot glue and leave that nut a little loose so that it can, the linkage stopper can rotate in the servo arm instead of just being bound tight, and put a blob of hot glue around the nut and then to the next hole on the servo, and that holds the nut from being able to back out?
It's Foam Force is the gentleman's name on our servers. Sorry. I can't remember his name offhand, and I do remember meeting
him. We apologize
him.
For that.
Yeah, so sorry, but hi. It was his first time out, I think, on one of the build nights. He's like, I wonder what this is about. And he had a good time. It was great. Yeah, I've done that before, and it still backs out sometimes. It is a better solution than not having it. I've had too many times where I've had the plane go down because of that failure specifically. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm just going to stop using them on these kind of projects. They might be great for RC cars, you know, but this isn't, I don't think this is where I need to do something different. So,
well, they're good if we can get around that issue of the nut backing off.
Right.
And then also, Ron and Tom talked about it when they were talking about various linkage connections, but you need to file a flat spot for that set screw to grab. So it's not setting on as like a tangent point. It's actually got something right. to bite.
Yeah, and I mean, that helps for sure for it to not move up and down the wire itself, which I agree. That's the right move. But the nut coming off, I mean, that's the
separate
problem.
Issue.
Because once that came off, it came out of the control arm and the whole thing was a mess, you know? Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I took it home, right? And I was like, man, this happened. But the plane is in good shape. Otherwise, all things are working except for the control. So this is cool. I'll be able to try it again shortly. It'll be awesome. I was like, well, it flew really good until it didn't, you know? Like, it was doing good. I'm like, yeah, that actually made me feel really good because that was a maiden flight. And I went home. And then I realized I left my phone recording on the side bench. And I was like, well, I got to do a meeting. And then when I'm done with the meeting, let me do the control arm. Set the control arm the old-fashioned way, right? Where it's just hard set. And when I go back out there, I'm going to go fly this thing again. And sure enough, you know, I have 2 hours of footage of what people do at the field.
When you're not there.
When I'm not there. And when I'm there. A little bit when I'm there, but mostly when I'm not. I got some really good footage of one of the guys I recently met. He was flying a helicopter. And he wasn't doing like hot roddy stuff, but he was doing a really good job kind of flying around. So like a T-Rex 700, so 700 millimeters, I think, was the length of each blade. So it's a pretty good-sized bird. But he was flying around having a good time with it, and it was close enough, and so you got, and it stayed at kind of eye level, so you got some really good view of it. So I'm gonna, when I do the video for the Ansley Peace Drone of what I captured, because I've got some really good FPV footage. I put the cube camera in the nose, which is kind of what it's designed for, and I have the FPV camera on the top, so I got some like really clear footage, and I've got some pretty good FPV from the goggles footage, you know. Which is a little bit fuzzy, so you can kind of see the difference. And I've got a couple static shots, not too many, from the phone. But I've got a couple extra footage, so I might actually put a couple clips at the end of it, at the end of the video. So I brought it out there, and I asked somebody to hurl it again because, you know, my arm hasn't been quite right. And I was like, I need time. I need to be on the sticks like right away because it doesn't float because it's heavy. So when you toss it, you kind of have to gun it pretty quick. And I don't feel comfortable having a full throttle with a 12-inch prop as I hurl this thing over with a forearm throw. Like, that's...
Right.
That seems like a recipe for cutting your arm to pieces. Thanks. You know, and I'm not doing that to anybody else either. So I said, look, you launch it like you're launching a glider, right? You know, a little bit high, and I'll gun it after you've released it. He's like, oh, okay, if you're sure. Anyway, so we did that, and it went up again, and it flew around really good. I got about 3 or 4 circuits, and then I did a loop, and then I went a little bit further, and I did a roll. And after I came out of the roll, I still have no idea what happened, but something happened. And at this point, I had taken off the stabilizer, and I went to full manual.
Okay.
So there was no chance that was an issue. I'm like, well, let me go back to the basics. Like, if it's messed up, it's got to be the plane. And if the plane's flying well and I put the stabilizer in and something goes wrong, I know the stabilizer is the issue at that point, you know. Let me kind of eliminate issues, right? And it came down, and I was able to basically do a flat spin. And so it came down almost like a, we'll call it heavy parachute.
Huh.
But it was into the beans, way in the middle.
Good job.
Yeah. And I was like, forget it.
You had to make that walk that Mike had to make.
No, it's worse than that. These beans are up to my shoulders. And it's it was that walk, if not further. It was the one that Amy and I both had to make that one day we talked about. It was, and I'm like, I don't think I'm ever going to find this. I really don't. Like, I need to be high enough to be able to see the color, and I, you know, it's not loud enough. I don't think I'm going to find this. And so I went out, but I had a good bead. Like, I had a good line. I had like a tree to line up on. I was in line, and I was like, all right, let's do it. So I went out and I just kept walking and walking and walking and walking. I'm still on the line. I'm like, I've got to be close. How in the world am I going to be able to tell? Like, I blipped the thing. I'm like, I don't hear anything. Did the servos, still didn't hear anything. I'm just kind of looking around, and I looked at my RSSI feed, and it was blipping between 4 and 5 bars. So I was getting telemetry, which means everything was hooked up, which is good. So I'm like, well, wait a second. If I turn and it goes to 4, that means it's getting worse, which means I'm pointing away. Well, let me turn until I hit, it goes from 4 bars to 5. I'll mark that edge, and I'll keep turning as it's on 5. And when it goes to 4, I'll mark the other edge, right? Those two angles. And then and then you clap your hands together, wherever they meet in the middle, that's the direction your plane is at. So I did it. I walked over. And I'm like, it's got to be really close. And then because everything was 5 bars. I'm like, no matter which way I turned, it was 5 bars. So I'm like, shoot, I'm right here, and I can't find the plane because it's in the middle of these stupid beans. I'm like, dang it. What am I going to do? So I started turning around, and I noticed I turned a certain direction, and there was no bars. And then I realized my body's blocking the radio signal. Right? So now I do the opposite.
Okay.
So now I'm pointing away from the plane, and wherever it goes from 5 bars to 0, and then when it goes from 0 back to 5 bars, I take those two limits and I clap my hands together, you know, bring my hands together in the middle. And directly behind that is where the plane is. And sure as not, I did that. I turned around and walked about 6 steps, maybe 7, and I could see the plane. It was nice. Right where it's supposed to be. I was like, hallelujah. Woohoo. And then I picked it up and I looked. There was nothing wrong with the plane. I mean, the control surfaces were connected. They were all responding exactly like they're supposed to. There was nothing wrong with the motor. The motor spun up just fine. The CG wasn't any different than it's supposed to be. I mean, maybe it was and I didn't notice. Maybe it was a slight change. But the battery seemed to be in there tight. And then I was able to recover all the, you know, I recovered my cameras. So I didn't lose a thing. It was perfect. I took it home. I went back, and I was like, I don't know what happened, but, you know, I'll give it another go. Everybody was leaving at that point. I gave it another toss, and, of course, that's when the prop struck the ground before I could get enough throttle up, and I ripped the firewall off. I was like, darn it.
Dagnabbit.
Like, dang it. I was going to give it another try to see, like, if I could just fly it around some more. Anyway, so I wasn't able to. I took it home, so I'm not disappointed. It flew really good. It flew exactly like I was hoping it would, so that's excellent. I don't know, so I'm really kind of heartened by it. I wish it had flown well for longer. It definitely kind of bummed me out though. And then another plane I bought, Flight Test had a big sale on the Pterosaur, which is basically, you know, those little gliders. LIDL, the store. They have those little foam indestructible gliders. If you look it up, you'll see. Well, apparently, and the whole time I've looked at these things, I'm like, somebody needs to put two little efficient motors on the front and just fly it, right? Because they're indestructible. They're great beginner planes. That's what should be the start plane for almost everybody. Well, they have one for sale. It's called the Pterosaur. It's basically that plane with the two little, it's like an easy pack on it. It's a commercially made deal. So, but it went on sale from $48 to $50, which is what it was at flight test, to $30. I'm like, for $30, I'll buy it. And here's my thought is, if it goes pretty well and we do a STEM night this year or something at school or at STEM, Scouts, I mean, we'll have a contest and whoever wins it, they could take that home, you know? And if they get into the hobby, then that's even better.
Okay.
Or whatever. Or my son just played, you know, so we went out the other day and flew it. I think it was after the first or second day of school. And we flew it and there was a decent breeze, but it literally, you just need to put enough throttle to turn the motors on. And that's enough to fly it around. So this thing sips battery. And it says like the flight time is like 40 minutes. And I couldn't sit. We couldn't sit around for that long. And then the wind started to go. And I'm like, okay, now you're slope soaring this. You need to kind of go left and a little to the right and going to go and just like weave back and forth like a snake and just keep it like in front of you at the same thing. And then I'm talking to somebody. And of course, it goes over the pavilion that we're standing in front of to get shade. And I'm like, oh, no, we can't see it. But he recovered it, and we brought it back. And so Logan was flying that for a little while, and he had a good time. And he's like, it was a little windy, though. It was fun, though. I'm like, yeah, we'll have to try that at the field when it's not so windy. Amy tried it. I tried it at the field later in the week, and there was no wind at all. And we just flew it around. You know, we just had a good time flying that stuff. So that was good. I've got a design cut out for a secret project I'm working on, so I'm looking forward to building that and starting to take some pictures and seeing how that works out. It was one of those things where I've been working on this slowly but surely. And then last but not least, there's an old NASA project called the 85321 Quiet Bird. It's like the predecessor to all the stealth tech.
Okay.
And it's basically like what today's drones look like, more or less. So I thought that this would actually, and there's a couple 3D view models of our plans, I mean, that have like all the details, all the sections, all the plans, all the you know, side view, you know, the elevation, the plan, the front view, all that stuff. So I'm like, this would actually be a really good plan set to use to learn. Because I'm like, I'm so tired of not understanding how to turn something like this, which I should be able to do, I feel like, into a 3D model. And so I'm like, all right, I'm going to learn. I'm going to take this. I'm going to use it to learn, which is pretty cool. So that's what I've done. Let's see.
Okay.
And you can, I've got the one thing open, and I know Joe doesn't actually need to see it all, but...
That's why... Okay, let me watch your stream then.
But there's a... This is the plan view. And then turn this into a 3D model. I learned how to loft. It's not perfect, but it's a lot better than I thought it was going to turn out. I've got to put the airfoil sections in to bring the wings together. And then I've got the V-tail airfoils to put in there. I got to figure out how to get the hole to go from the motor, from the intakes to the thrust exit. But I made significant progress, and I think I understand the process a lot better. Finally, I think I could pull it off now.
Okay, yeah. I get my stuff set back up. I have to show you a 3D thing I was working on.
Yeah, man.
Because I don't know how much I talked to you about that one.
No, we'll have to cover that when we get there. But I mean, so that's a lot, I guess, but it's not, you know, it seems like a couple things, but I feel like I made really good progress on this, and I'm glad I'm in the midst of all of the moving and all of the... displaced things, then I'm able to make some progress on some projects I've got that have been rolling around in my head. It's important that they keep leaking out, you know?
Yeah.
So, okay. And speaking of those secret projects, I was going to say, if you want to see them, we have some build parties coming up. You want to tell us some about that?
Yes, that's what I actually what I was switching gears into. Nice, so good. It's been a while since we've done a build party, at least one scheduled and announced like this. So we're going to go ahead and do two of them. We've got, as best we can figure, we should be available for Friday, September 29th, 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time, and Friday, October 13th. 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. And then maybe after that, or after those, we may get like a Saturday midday hour time for our non-U.S. folks.
Yep.
To be able to join in. But just quickly throwing dates at the wall, that's what we came up with, so we can actually schedule them and get back into the habit, because pretty much since Flight Fest, I don't think we've really done but maybe one.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie.
Things have just been busy.
Yeah, Flight Fest kind of threw a bit of chaos in there, in a good way. So, yeah, that's good.
Speaking of Flight Fest, yeah, why don't you do this segment and then we'll do our Flight Fest audio.
All right. Well, if you value the work that Joe and I do on this podcast, we ask you to pass it along if you can to someone you think will enjoy hearing this conversation. Also, we ask you to consider joining our patrons who help keep the lights on. Even by donating $1 a month, that would be a big help. It's always greatly appreciated, and we appreciate you listening today. So thank you so much. Joe, you're going to talk about, finish up on these servos, right? What were we going to finish up on?
That's going to be a hard cut.
Do you want me to put a little bit of, like, you know, music in the middle?
No, just like
I got wind chimes.
You ended that section, took half a breath, and it was plowing into the next one. But okay. but go ahead. No, I'm sorry. Pick up and we'll go.
No, so we'll head on to one of the main segments, which is finishing up our server conversation from last time. I mean, last time I know we talked about kind of what are the different big parts and pieces, how do you measure them, what are the things you look for, you know, when you're designing a servo or when you're designing a plane, you know, what do you need? You know, how do you select the servo you need to a degree? What's bulk size and stuff like that. But there were things we missed. So we kind of got to the outside and then we were starting to get deep into the inside. And why don't you talk about the rest of that?
Yeah, so I've got 3 points that I wanted to go back and revisit briefly, because they weren't as big a conversation point as I thought they were. Okay. I'm trying to see, did I get... I did not get an actual motor speed, so I was going to see if I could get like a DC motor speed, because I know last time you threw a speed out there, but it was in KV, and... I don't know if DC motors work in KV.
Well, yeah, maybe it's RPMs, right? But the KV, if it's a 5-volt motor, right? If it's operating off of 5 volts, that's easy to find out the speed. I thought they usually run like 2,200 RPMs or something. 22,000 RPMs. I'm sorry, 29,000. They're fast.
Yeah, it's the little ones can be fast. I didn't find any details on that. The one bit of detail that I was able to find, I couldn't even get a good gear reduction ratio because I looked at data sheets and, you know, none of the 9-gram servo data sheets I was looking at were giving me anything. But as best I can tell, to answer that question of gear reduction, for the servos from their DC motor to their servo arm, ranges from 150:1 to 220:1, being their gear reduction ratio.
Oh, wow. That makes sense. No, if you're looking, I found something here that said the servo motors themselves run between 3,000 to 5,000 RPMs. And if you're reducing it by 220, you're getting, you know, a couple rotations, like 1,000.
Do I need to run that through a calculator real quick?
No, I don't know.
Yeah, what was the KV?
3,000. It doesn't a kV. It's a revolutions per minute.
I'm sorry.
3,000 to 5,000. It said the servo motors generally run, and I don't know if it's talking about the servo gear rotation. I think they're talking about the motor.
Yeah, I don't know, because 5,000 RPM divided by 220 gear reduction ratio is 22.7 would be the RPM on the servo output.
Right, that doesn't make...
Which seems awfully slow for a servo.
Well, and so when you're looking at the motors, they also have a speed, basically the time it goes a 60-degree rotation.
And those I think that's still servo output.
That is servo output. I mean, because ultimately, when it comes down to it, I don't care how fast the motor is. I mean, I do care how fast the motor is and how the gearing is, but what I care about really is how much torque does that arm have and how fast does it rotate from one side to the other, right? From its arc.
But what
I
was getting at there was the curiosity of how fast is that motor running. You know, when you're looking at gearboxes and torque and all that, part of the reason that you're reducing the gear or, you know, amplifying that gear ratio. So, say on the high end, 220. 220 motor revolutions is one full servo arm revolution. And we're not making full use of that. But that gives you an idea of the gear down and why such a little motor that's, you know, like the width of a screwdriver shaft can output the kind of force that it is. It's because the amplification of that force through those gears to a limit, because you then also pick up friction forces. But if you've ever messed with multiple pulleys and gears and such, you know that as you add more and more pulleys loop back on themselves, that input force is multiplied as it goes out. I think something my dad told me years ago was like, you could, assuming you had enough pulleys and gears, you could lift a house with a handheld DC motor. You just gotta have enough pulleys. So, enough pulleys and enough rope to take it up. That was the discussion on motor speeds and servo gear reductions. Sort of the main bulk of what I'm looking at here is the potentiometers. Because I was curious how they work. I took apart our servo and got down to
the potentiometer level. You're talking about like the blue 9-gram servos?
Right.
Got it. Go ahead.
And essentially what I saw in there was a strip of metal running a half circle strip of metal that looked like, say, a crescent moon.
Mm-hmm.
Was essentially what I was seeing in the potentiometer section of the circuit. And I knew that had to do with the resistances, but I wasn't exactly sure how they were calculating that. When we're talking about potentiometers, there's two types. Generally, there's a rheostat, which uses two of the three poles, and there's a voltage divider. Now, with your, which uses all three poles, when you're dealing with those three poles, you've got that crescent moon metal strip that runs circular around the center point. There's voltage that's put on that, and that serves as two poles. In the case of a rheostat, it's only using one side of that, but we're not too concerned with the rheostat. We're using a voltage divider. But then there's the central bit where there's a central point that's what is actually turning, and there's a conductive arm that reaches out and touches the strip of metal that runs in that semicircle arc. And that is called a wiper, and that is essentially your output. So in the case of the voltage divider, and I'll see, we've got a link to it in the show notes, so click this so you can see the pictures. But it's showing, say you got a clock face, you know, and take your minute hand, that's your wiper, and go from the 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock, no, 5 to 7 o'clock positions.
Yep.
And run a metal strip around that from the 5 counterclockwise to the 7.
Right.
And that would run at the length of the, or as far out as the minute hand, and the minute hand being your wiper. And that wiper would move across that metal strip, and that's what it's sensing. And then one right. side of that metal strip is your voltage input. The other side of that metal strip is your voltage ground. That metal strip that the wiper is going along is, well, not the wiper itself, but the metal strip that's running from the 5 to the 7 o'clock, that's a resistive strip.
Right.
And as the wiper moves along that, the further away from the voltage supply it gets, the more resistance is present. So the output, which runs through the wiper and through the output pin, as you move away from the voltage supplied side, that there's more and more resistive strip present, and it's dropping the voltage. And that's what is being output and sensed by your servo control circuit.
And that's telling the servo the position of the arm. And when it gets to whatever that voltage needs to be for that position, it says, okay, we're good. And it stays put.
Mm-hmm.
And it stays at that right. voltage. And it will basically do the loop to go back and check to make sure it's at the right voltage setting. Your receiver sent it. Your receiver said, I want it to be at this position, which is whatever voltage. And then so it says, okay, we'll do this. We'll do a direction left or right until we get to that voltage, and then we'll stop.
Right. So more accurately, your receiver sends a PWM signal to the servo control circuit, which says, okay, for this signal value, this is the resistance I'm expecting. Right. This is the voltage I need it to be at. And so if I'm below that,
go up.
If there's more voltage present, that means I need to go further in the arc,
right.
or vice versa,
and
to
then
get to where it needs to go.
Right, it doesn't until it reaches that and it stays put.
Yeah, it's very rudimentary logic as far as circuitry goes.
Yeah, it's really basic.
But in its time, like when integrated circuits and all that were coming out, like that was. Cutting edge. And early on, and I'm not going to try to dive back into the history of these, but early on,
okay.
there were like mechanical mm-hmm. feedback loops that compared voltage and power output to handle, and I don't understand all that, but those were early days of servos as they were like trying to figure a lot of this stuff out, and it dealt with big DC motors and all that.
Yeah.
So, but that was returning to that, to answer that question that I didn't have an answer for how that worked.
I mean, ultimately that's how your servo knows where to be when you tell it, hey, move whatever your signal is on the stick. That's how it transfers that signal into a position on the arm.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. That's really cool.
And if,
too.
Yeah, and for those who have it, some of the guys that listen are going to have, or some of you guys that listen will have the hobby electronics to do this, or have already done it. If you if you take your, if you say you have an Arduino board, you can set a pin to a analog read and take the output from the, from a little potentiometer and plug that into that, that analog read pin. And then you can just supply it voltage off the voltage and ground straight from the Arduino, because it's got voltage and ground pins, and you can just straight read that pin, and as you turn it, you will see the values change. And I think it goes from, the values range from zero, is either zero to one, or no, zero to 255, I think, mm-hmm. is how the analog read works. And what it's doing is sensing the voltage level and converting that to a digital value, which is essentially what the integrated circuit on the servo is doing. It's reading that voltage value, assigning it a digital value, and then using that value to say, I need to go this way or that.
Yep. Excellent. What else?
That, I think that,
is there anything else?
That, nope. That pretty much wraps up my servo discussion from a couple weeks ago. I don't want to. I don't want to harp on it too long.
No, just one other thing. Is there a discussion about the different kinds of gears in the reduction? Or did we already kind of cover that? I can't remember.
You mean the plastic nylon versus metal gear?
Right. Well, versus aluminum versus, you know, hardened steel versus titanium, right? Like, as you go through different gears, what does that give you? Different gear materials, what does that give you?
I don't, we may have briefly touched on it last time. The only thing that really applies to us is whether we're running plastic or metal gear in our stuff.
Yeah.
I can't speak to anything else. And I think with metal gear for us, it's probably aluminum.
Yeah, I think generally it is. Generally, I think it is. And yeah. Unless you're getting like a car servo, like that's the difference between, I think, RC aircraft servos and like RC car servos is aluminum versus steel.
For
us, and the weight, the consequence of the weight.
For this, for us, the Metal Gear servos are about a dollar or two more per servo, but they are less prone to the gears stripping. They will still strip, but they don't strip as easily as the plastic gear.
Right, and you're not increasing a torque value either. You're not getting more speed or more torque out of it. The motor is still doing the motor's thing at the same gear ratio. What you're gaining is the teeth don't fail on the gears when it encounters resistance. It fails less
often. Likely.
Yeah. Yeah. My mistake.
Because you're still dealing with cheap parts.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, for $2, that's incredible. Or however much it is. I still feel that's quite the bang for the buck. Considering all the fun we get to have with that, forget it.
Oh, Metal Gear's about all I run if I can help it.
Yeah, and that's when you also think about, like, well, what... and that's where you talk about philosophies about, you know, depending on what you're building, how it all plays into how reliable you need your plane to be. How much money you put into the plane is, it's worth spending more. Like, when you have a failure like I did, you know, there's a couple failure points. Is a servo going to fail? Is it the arm? Is it the connection? Is it the control rod? Is it the surface? Like, where do you want it to fail, right? If you don't want it to be the servo, you spend a little extra money on the servo. For the cost, it gives you the peace of mind, usually.
Which?
Not always. When, I mean...
Yeah, well, on that same token, you know, and we've, you know, had fun conversations and fun banter and debates about the cost of things, but that same debate that we'll have internally about a plastic gear servo versus a metal gear servo is the same debate that the guys that spend a lot more money on their hobby
like tenfold
Right, have with their servos. You know, a $20 servo versus an $80 servo versus a, you know, we're spending $15 on a receiver, they're spending $60, $70 on a receiver, we're spending $150 on a transmitter, and they're spending $1,300 on a transmitter on the high end.
Right.
Or even the low end, depending.
Right, because they're looking for reliability. The cost of not losing the plane that costs as much as a car, the RC plane that's as much as a car, like the reliability is worth the extra cost to them. And that's, of course, one where you got to do that utility equation. Is it worth my money? Is it worth the time for the peace of mind and for the reliability we think we're going to get? And what some people have tested is that it's some of the stuff is just as reliable, even though it's much cheaper. But the question is, do you really want to test that? How much are you willing to put on the line for that when you're putting up a $20,000 RC airplane?
It's, you know, always a risk-benefit analysis. And you look at, I mean,
you're worth throwing $5 planes in. So, yeah, if I'm spending more than $2 on servos, I might be really overspending on the components for that kind of plane.
Well, a direct correlation, a direct translation from our hobby into the real world is the airline industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's when we start transitioning into that, we're talking safety factor.
Yeah, safety factors, thousands of cycles per fail.
Right, and the chance of something failing and how bad would a failure be is why for... you know, a lot of things that are just, you know, like aerospace grade. That's why we have aerospace grade and, you know, military grade and this kind of, like, it's tested. It is stressed. It is designed outside the standard deviations, if you will, to be able to withstand it. And you're paying for it.
Which is how a lot of the maintenance guidelines come about because they say, well, operation within a certain amount of cycles has an X amount of percentage reliability. Outside of that is beyond the risk limit where we want to have. So once it reaches this limit, it needs to be maintained and brought to basically a zero again. So that way that safety is now reset.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you're like, okay, that's why certain things have to be replaced on your car or your plane real life before a certain point. Though it could go further. The longer you go, the more risk you're taking that there will be a failure. And when certain things like airplanes, the failure isn't really the option. It's not an option in, well, maybe today it'll be okay. You know, like, no, the answer is no.
Yeah, you got 200 souls on board. No. Get that thing fixed.
Heck, you got four. Get it fixed.
You got one, get it fixed. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly. And the same goes with the RC plane. You know, you look at what you're doing and how sketchy is it. You know, you look at the sketch factor and kind of go like, well, for what it is and what I'm about to do, like, I know. But if I knew what I was going to do was going to fly near crowds or expensive stuff that I might have to replace or pay for, if it fails, like, okay, well, now my reliability factor has to be a lot higher. Like, I'm not willing to risk all that, you know, in those situations. Like, but if I'm in the middle of a field, in the middle of nowhere, not bothering anybody, and the risk is I might lose it in a bean, or I might slam it into, you know, somebody else's RC plane. I mean, those are the risks I'm assessing. You know, that's a different animal. That's much different.
That's
a failure.
I'm so sorry. Ever since you said sketch factor, and I've heard it, but
how sketchy it is.
No, it's great. Like, for whatever reason, in the back of my head, I'm like, okay, we need to make that like a podcast logo, or I need to make a T-shirt that's like got an actual formula. And then I was like, if we ever
move. This is the end of the aviation RC new podcast. We are
this
now.
Is, yeah,
this is also the beginning exactly of the Sketch Factor. Welcome to the Sketch Factor. I'm Matt. Today
I'm
with
Joe.
Your co-host Joe, and we're here to talk about the sketchy crap we do. Join us. We're going to talk about how far do we push it. Just kidding.
I think if we ever retired this name, but kept going, we'd have to call it Sketch Factor.
Yeah, we'll call it the Sketch Factor. All right, let's hold on. We have to retitle this now. No, anyway.
Welcome to the Sketch Factor podcast. All right, enough fun with that. Tell me about the FAA RID, and then we'll close out with some more Flight Fest audio.
Okay, before I do, I want to ask every one of our listeners here, if you haven't been to our Discord server, please consider joining us one day, checking it out, seeing what it's about. There's a link in the description below. You could go to discord.gg/H5.
You're
going to
read that, aren't you?
No, forget it. Just go to the link.
Okay.
It'll be a lot easier. There's
link
a
in the doobly-doo.
Right, there is a description, I believe, on our website. The website is www.aviationrcnoob.com. And if you're there, please let us know any topic ideas, things you'd like us to cover on this podcast. Near the bottom of the list, there is podcast topic ideas, or at least one of the topics down there. There's also one for history segment requests. Please let us know what you want to hear. If there's no skin off of Joe or I's nose, we'd love to have something that makes you happy. If we have a choice between this or that, and that makes you happy and the other one doesn't, you know, we're in. Let's do it. All right, so why don't we talk about the FAA remote ID? Dum-dum-dum. Like it's always doom and gloom whenever we bring that up. But ultimately, so the FAA remote ID... Now I'm so far out of the legal terminology, but basically they have been required that as part of the legislation that's been passed, the rulemaking that has been passed in about a week. So September 16th, 2023 is the official date that the FAA will be putting the hobbyist part of the remote ID law into place, which basically states like a year before this, the manufacturers were all required to install or have all of their all-in-one systems. They had to contain remote ID or the capacity for remote ID. And then they said a year later, September 16, 2023, not 2022, all the hobbyists need to either comply with flying in a FRIA, flying under 250 grams, or having a remote ID unit on their broadcast unit on their UAS, unmanned aerial vehicle, actually UAV, I think, or as part of the UAS, which is the unmanned aerial system that promotes or broadcasts the location of the takeoff point, the aircraft itself, as well as its and the data about where the aircraft is. So a start point and then where the aircraft is in space. And then it has to be, I think, I don't even know if there's a limit designation on how far that needed to go. I want to say like had to be in the order of thousands of feet or something like that. Minimum, and I think it wanted to see more. I think they ended up getting a lot more than they wanted or they needed. So September 6th is only a week away, and the FAA promised. Actually, that's not true. They didn't promise, but they were there when people were submitting their comments about the proposed rulemaking. It was nobody even knows what this technology is. It isn't even out yet. It hasn't been developed. You're only giving people a year or two to develop it, put it in place, and have it available for the, 80,000 to, 800,000 RC enthusiasts, right? Somehow they're going to have it all available. right? And it's going to be for about $50. So don't worry. That's what we were promised. That's what everybody feels like we were promised or we were told in response to this is a bad idea by everybody and a lot of people in the RC community. We're like, this is terrible. No, we don't want this. This isn't good. This is good for us. It's not good for the community. It's not good for aviation. I don't know what you guys are thinking. That was a lot of the 60,000 plus comments. And so it looks like, you know, according to a number of the, we'll call it the insight sources, these are the people who've been working the commercial industry groups and some of the special interest groups that have been working closely with the FAA during the remote ID lawmaking process or rulemaking enforcement, enforceable actions, right? They made it law so that way if you are found in violation, you can have, you can be determined that you're breaking a law and you can have punitive damages put against you, right? But that isn't done by the FAA. The FAA just makes the rules. They do not enforce it. So right now we're a week out. We haven't heard anything. I think the rules were that there were, was it 2,000 FRIAs? 49% of them have already been passed. Let's see, hold on. It was something along those orders. I think 1,000 of them had been reviewed. 800 of them had passed. 200 of them had been rejected. There were still another 800 to go. I think it was 1,800. And that's purely from the AMA. So they haven't even made it through the AMA applications that have been submitted for FRIAs. Now, supposedly, you will not be in compliance with this regulation if you aren't flying at a FRIA and you don't have remote ID. Now, if you remember our couple podcasts ago where we talked about remote ID units, good luck finding one available. Honestly, I've gone to a lot of different sites, and either they aren't in manufacture enough where they're available for everybody, so for distribution, or they're just not, you know, they're really expensive. They're like the $300 units are probably available, but they're coming from Czechoslovakia, and I'm sure it'll take a little bit to get here. So if you didn't order it or pre-order it, good luck. Sky ID is supposedly here. Pre-order now. We promise you we'll get it within 3 weeks-ish of the compliance date.
How's the flight test module doing?
I haven't seen it available for sale. They have talked about it. They've mentioned on a number of their videos that it's in production. It's going to be available. We have other cool things that we're going to do with it too. So we're doing our best to help you be compliant. Is pretty much what they said. They are also rejected. Their Edgewater Air Park is rejected. And I think the reasons, which I think are kind of vague, are that there are people there. And that there's a building on site. Which, I don't know. Again, it's beyond me. So that means good luck having a school site be part of a FRIA, right?
So much for education. Wasn't that supposed to be a thing that schools could have FRIAs on them?
Theoretically. But if they're not accepting applications with a building site as part of the property, you know? I don't know. I mean, ultimately, it's a little sketchy. I mean, I didn't see anything that was... and if anybody wants to post in our thing on... We have a... I think we have a remote ID channel or an FAA channel. Let us know what you find. I'm always curious to see what's going on. But the Pilot Institute, which is basically a for-profit group that their job is to get people Part 107 certified or get them, you know, full pilot certified, get their private pilot license, PPL. So they have made it their job and their business to make sure people are compliant, right? And so their response, and there's a link to a YouTube video that they kind of made to go with this, but basically the Greg Riverdew, I'm not sure I'm saying his name right, but he's a co-founder of the Pilot Institute, and this is just the beginning paragraph. It goes on for a long while. There's a lot more details. I urge you, I'll link this document there. But basically, and the link to the video, he's indicating it's like, you know, we get questions from people who are trying to be compliant all the time. And they're wondering, you know, where are these units that we're supposed to put on there? You know, why aren't they $50? When am I supposed to be? Where's the Freya? How do I determine which one's the Freya? Has my Freya been approved? You know, where can I go fly? Where can I not fly? Does my DJI that I purchased, is that compliant? I don't know. Will my DJI shut off on the 16th? Because, you know, it may not be in compliance and they'll push another, some sort of software update. And all of a sudden, you basically bought a really expensive...
good question, because I got a DJI sitting here.
Yep. Is it going to be a DJI brick? Who knows? Right?
I'm going to be mad if it is.
This is the question they're getting, and they're like, what the F? You know, what is going on, FAA? What the FAA is going on?
Easy.
All right. Anyway, so they're just kind of like, hey, you guys dropped the ball. And if you listen to somebody like XJet, who's in New Zealand, he's been following this closely, because usually when there's policy passed in the United States, it's like, oh, it's a precedent. We can do it here. And so all the other countries jump on the same bandwagon and start passing the same regulations that are not, honestly, I hate to say it, but this doesn't feel really well thought out. This feels very knee-jerk reaction and somewhat haphazard. I think the intent is for a safer skyway to some degree, right? I think there's other things going on. We've talked about it in the past. All right, anyway, so he sent out a poll to the customers of theirs, right, of the Pilot Institute, and asked the industry connections and community groups to help share the survey, so try to get as many responses as they could. They collected 2,081 responses, and the results indicated a community partially unprepared for remote ID requirements. So 49% stated they already have a drone equipped with standard remote ID. 51% revealed the need for at least one remote ID module. 10% say that they're relying on flying sub 55 pounds or 250 grams to be compliant, so they have the exception under the recreational exemption. 5% say we would operate only in FAA-recognized identification areas. That's the FRIAs. And so basically, he goes on to say that the reasons for our request to delay remote ID enforcement are as follows. He points concerns like 27% of the entire flying population will be forced into noncompliance due to module unavailability. He also notes that 23% reported that the modules are currently backordered, and 19% said that their drone will be compliant in early December via firmware update, which was announced by DJI last week, which is, I think this was a thing that was released today, if not yesterday, this article. There we go. Furthermore, affordability is a concern. Of 51% who reported needing remote ID, more than half of them said that they have not ordered yet because the pricing is a concern. And he goes on to continue much further that he's concerned that this remote ID module issue has many operators making a choice to not comply, or they are unable to comply, and 43% of the operators will be forced into noncompliance in 2 weeks. Or we'll just simply not do it, period. They further go on to suggest that everybody else continue to spend the next couple weeks and not just write a letter to the FAA. It says, considering the obstacles, he respectfully urges a delay in enforcement, comparing the situation to the FAA's decision last year to postpone the enforcement for drone manufacturers, which is what happened. They delayed it to December. And I think that's what a lot of people are speculating will be happening. That's kind of a lot of what they suspect. But if you remember last time, do you remember when they did that, made that decision public?
I don't.
September 16th, the day that everybody either had to comply or be in violation. They said, by the way, you have till December. Well, thanks for the notice, man. We really appreciate you keeping us not from panicking, you know?
Right.
So one of the things that I think if you want the FAA to look, this is something that, again, listening to X-Jet, listening to Bruce Simpson, who's RC Model Review and X-Jet, I think there's two YouTube channels, he's kind of said, look, when you get to a certain point, when you're about a week away from the compliance, this is when you reach out to your news organizations and let every one of them know, be like, hey, here's the statute, here's the rule, this is what they've done. We're a week away and we don't have solutions. They've been negligent in doing what they're supposed to do to ensure that people can be compliant. They haven't notified anybody of any delays. So everybody's looking 1 week to go and there's no solutions. Not just that, but they still haven't finished reviewing the FRIAs. They took forever to get their FRIA data out. They took a long time to complete and finalize the data on the actual unit so that people can manufacture it. There's a reason why you can't get manufactured units now. Is because it took them, I think, a full year for them to decide on exactly what it needed to be. Because they didn't know. They hadn't figured it out when they passed the law. And if this gets notified to the public sector, in the sense of public news organizations, where they can take this story, which right now is sensational, it'll be at the top of the pile and it won't be pushed to the bottom. Things won't go on top of it because it's not important. You know, if it were done 2 weeks ago, it's not important now. It's important in a couple weeks. So we'll put things on top of it, right? So right. Now's the kind of time where if you want to make sure that the greater public at large realizes that this is an issue and what kind of an issue this is the time to let them know. But you want to have your information solid. You want to go and explain where the issue is. Where did it start? What proceeded to the point where that made it an issue? You know, where did the failings happen? Where did they, were they slow on the ball to do the things? Because after the 16th, they're probably going to say on the 16th, yeah, we're delaying it till December. It's no big deal. But it is a big deal. Because ultimately, everybody's looking at this going, there's no way we can comply.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not really, to me, that's not doing your due diligence as a governing agency. And that's what they are. They're a governing agency, right? They write the rules. And granted, they were mandated to, right? So that's right. A whole separate issue we've talked about in the past. So go to some of our other FAA issues and you'll hear some of that. And they provide a letter that goes over a lot of details. They said that there's basically almost... according to the FAA.gov.UAS, there are at least 540,000, half a million recreational flyers based on trust certificate issues. Our data shows that 45% of recreational issues, flyers, have at least one drone needing a module. 20% of recreational flyers reported that they would not voluntarily not comply with remote ID requirements. This puts the number of modules needed for recreational flyers at around 190,000. According to that same government source, there are 331 certified remote pilots. Our data shows that 59% of those remote pilots need at least one module. 12% of those remote pilots reported they would voluntarily not comply with remote ID requirements. This puts the number of modules needed for remote pilots at least at 171,000 modules. Only 3% of our surveyed population who needed a module reported actually having received theirs and are currently being compliant. Using the approximate total of demand of, was it a third of a million, roughly 365,000 units, this is possibly only 11,000 units being delivered to date. Its current supply chain issues are worldwide, and with only 6 approved module manufacturers and over 350,000 units needed, delaying enforcement until March 2024 would help manufacturers keep up with demand. So that's their suggestion. That's still over 2,200 units per manufacturer per week over the next 26 weeks, over the next half a year. I mean, granted, I don't know how fast those get produced. Maybe it gets produced thousands at a time. I don't know. But... you know, those numbers are pretty difficult to I guess, to not, you know, they really highlight some of the issues that have been going on, I think.
Well, to run those kind of numbers, to manufacture those kind of numbers, production lines had to be set up. You know, machines had to be calibrated and geared up and figured out. And then you'd have to have a line or two dedicated to manufacturing just that part, you know, just that
right
product. Which, I mean, that's how manufacturing works. You gear up a line and you do it.
Yeah.
But I'd imagine with a lot of, and I don't know, but I would imagine with a lot of circuitry-based stuff, you know, I guess when it comes to electronic manufacturing, you have dedicated lines, but I don't know.
Sort of.
I don't see it being like production being big enough by that point in time anyway.
I guess the part that kind of strikes me about the survey data that they've done. Now, granted, I didn't look at, like, I don't know how statistically significant, et cetera, all this stuff. But, you know, I'm not, I guess it's just that when you look at their chart of how many people are going to comply, that 42% say that the price is high and they haven't ordered. Like, it's too expensive. I'm not ordering one. I certainly haven't yet. I can't imagine if you haven't ordered yet, why would you go ahead and do it? At least not until the price comes down by half, at least.
Yeah. I mean, I hadn't ordered anything, but it's just not been at
me neither
the forefront of my mind to worry about. And I just did a quick look. I may have missed it, but I didn't see the Flight Test EZ remote ID on their store page or on their affiliate site.
Nope. It's not there yet.
That's supposed to have it. And I did a quick Amazon search. I know that we had links for these things in the past, but I did a quick Amazon search to see what was out there. And on Amazon or on, not Amazon, there was one of the sites. It might have even been the site that Flight Test was linking as would have theirs in the future. They have a remote ID module, but it's for plugging into an Autopilot system. And so it's not a whole contained unit. It's an add-on unit.
Yeah.
So you have to have the Autopilot, you know, system on board the craft in the first place. Like that's what's available right now.
And that was the only, and that was the cheap one.
Yeah, that's was $50-$60.
Yeah. None of them approached the costs that were stabbed at the beginning, right? By the FAA, where the ones that claimed, oh, it's no big deal, it'll only be this much. Well,
how could you know?
Yeah, it's, I don't know. But just 42%. The price is too high. It hasn't even been ordered. Even if we could, right?
Yeah.
23%, it's not even available. That's a huge amount. And then when your goal, I mean, what's the point of a law if it's not going to be followed, right? Or what's a point of a rule if it's not going to be followed? And then, of course, look, I listen to a guy called, he's a disc jockey by day, but he does, his name is Ken Heron, and he does a bunch of like camera drone, that's the focus. But he focuses on drones, mostly. So anybody who's doing drones is focusing on the FAA remote ID because this will affect people's businesses and livelihoods immediately, right? If you own a camera business that where you go and take aerial footage in 11 days, if you aren't compliant, you won't be able to. Not by law. You won't be – the insurance will not probably support whatever – happens after that point, right? Because that's ultimately what it comes down to. And if you get yelled at, I guess, by the law, if they come, they can technically put forth action against you. It's now a law that they can then, you know, do something against you for. And that was so when you look at his stuff, We have a link here. They talk about that. And he's like, look, I know a lot of officers. And he goes, and he flies all over the place getting footage for a show. And he's a lot of the stuff you'll see. He has the conversation he has with the police on the thing. And he goes, I've run into a lot of police officers. To be honest, most of them have no idea what this is. They don't know what remote ID is. They don't know it's something to be enforced. They don't even know it's a law.
Yeah.
Let alone what you can do with these cameras. You know, like, they don't know. They have no idea. And the only reason why they come out is if somebody's complaining. So, honestly, if you're doing something in an area, in a space that's not bothering anybody or that's not going to piss off somebody in the neighboring property.
Oh,
pardon my language. Not going to upset somebody in the neighboring property. You're not going to have the police called out, and you're not going to be in an infraction because, you know, I'm not suggesting that's what you do, but that's the risk you're running, right? At that point forward, anytime you fly when you're not compliant, you are running a risk. But their comments, though, are that, well, what kind of risk is it if the police don't even know that it's a problem, right?
Yeah.
So, and they're the ones who have to enforce it because the FAA is not enforcing. But, I mean, it comes into an issue like the MiG-29 that went down over in Michigan, right? There's a guy that was on a lake a little ways away, probably about a mile away, right? Maybe a mile and a half. He had it on his boat. They were clearly in one of those, like, I'll call it drinking groups, where they're having a good time on a holiday weekend or something, right? And clearly he shouldn't be flying while intoxicated, and he probably shouldn't be boating while intoxicated. But boy, oh boy, he had one. He had it charged. He had it ready. So when the MiG went down, he put his drone up in the air and flew the mile and a half beyond visual line of sight over trees, over cars, over people, over emergency staff to get footage of this, which the news used, which is its own thing. That whole episode, the clip is to a little piece of that about FAA, but keep going and look more. Because one, the footage is really excellent. Like, you get a really good kind of sense as to what happened with that crash. But they go the whole time they're talking about, like, this is awful. This is all the things you should not do, which is why we're getting these enforcement actions by the FAA's people doing this stuff. And it goes, it's not, I mean, that's kind of a natural thing. But what the news organization should have done is said, absolutely not. We will not use your footage. Because this is not required legally. What you're doing is dangerous and it's illegal. You cannot fly this kind of mission over cars, over emergency staff. Like, those are literally violations, all of them. And that, you know, the FAA is doing enforcement actions against this person, I believe, levying civil actions, I think, against them. So that's a whole different thing. It's a set of fines they're probably going to get. And most of it is for education. They probably go, like, I didn't know, you know, because there's a good chance that person has no idea about all these rules.
Yeah, I mean, you bought a thing
and you put it up there.
Yeah, so, but again, decency, you got to think, what happens if I lose control of this thing?
Oh, well, yeah. And I mean, that's if you're thinking straight. Like, if you're really thinking it through, I'm with you. I mean, you and I think that way, I think, for the most part. You know, but something incredible and sensational. Like, you're the first person on the scene with one of these things. You're getting aerial footage of what's happening right now. Right? Yeah. It's just, you know, watch that. It's really interesting. I can't remember if they, I don't think they swear. I think they bleep it out if they say much. But YouTube nowadays, you just be careful. So it's a thing. It's a big thing. It certainly has a number of people on edge because they don't know what's going to happen, and it's not clear. And it's really potentially messing with people's livelihoods. So I think that's why there's a lot of people pretty upset. Definitely concerned.
Here's my prediction that you do not take to the bank and don't make life choices based off of. I think we're going to get to the date and they're going to end up pushing it back again.
Yeah, I agree. But well, what till? Till December? Till March?
I'm just saying they're going to push it back.
Right.
Whatever they push it back to, if it needs to be pushed back again, they'll push it back. It's no skin off their shoulders. You know, right. Until... until they're finally say, okay, we think it could be done now, therefore it's going to be implemented. Until that point hits, they can just push it back.
And honestly, if it does get implemented, if there's no enforcement,
don't say it. Oh, okay.
Just what's the point? Yeah. Other than government made me do it, so I did it. Now it's done. Now are we happy now? You know, like, I feel like that's kind of the approach. They made me do it. I did it. I'm not happy with it. It's done now. So now we're not in trouble. I don't really care what happens to the rest of you guys, you know? And I know that that's not entirely, that can't possibly be true. You know, that can't possibly be entirely true, but it's just, it doesn't feel responsible, you know? Yeah.
I don't know. I'm sure we'll have more news on this the next time we get together.
Yeah. And if you want to hear, like, the Balsa Builders, definitely a staunch AMA supporter and tends to be very go FAA to a degree, you know. Tim McKay also has one of those videos as well. So again, you're kind of getting different perspectives, right? Getting a foreign perspective with XJet, going I'll call camera drone type of operator with Ken Heron. And you have Tim McKay, who's kind of the traditional AMA flyer, whose site is likely to already be a FRIA, so he may never have to even worry or change anything, so it doesn't affect him. But, I mean, the people who watch his channel, it's affecting some of them, you know. So we'll have a link to all those guys. Yeah, it's certainly interesting, and I know in short order, it'll be water under the bridge, and it'll be what it is. And you'll be making a choice one way or the other what you're going to do. With any luck, in 3 months, there'll be units we can all at least purchase one of.
Mm-hmm.
And say, well, we have one. And if we choose to be compliant with what we're doing, we'll at least be able to put it on and put it in. So, all right.
All right.
Sorry.
Well,
trying to get off my soapbox, I swear.
I'm trying to pull you down, but
I know, I appreciate it. Like, oh, get down, man. The FA's watching.
I think I took a foot to the face a few minutes ago. Sorry, but that's about okay.
That. Yeah, sorry about that. No, I did good. It out of love, dang it.
All right. I think that's probably what we got there. If you don't have anything left, let's go ahead, cut to the last of the Flight Fest audio we got.
All right.
And we'll
let's do that.
We'll wrap that up.
Okay. Sounds like a good plan.
Hi, this is Matt Allen. I'm here with
Hugo Barnowski.
All right, and why did I stop by last night?
So you saw something that resembled a hat, and then you realized it was a plane.
It was a hat plane.
It
absolutely
is a hat plane.
Awesome. So and your whole family has been in the STEM tents and all sorts of stuff. We might get a chance to talk to. That's your mother, is that right?
That is our friend's mother. Though.
Okay, that's your friend's mother. Okay,
the mother
figure. There's your dad. Okay, so tell us a little bit about this hat. So what inspired it?
Last year at Flight Fest, I was the only pilot because my brother didn't know how to fly yet, and he got very bored in the 4 days that we were here. I don't know how he did it. Anyways, started building hats.
Because it was hot.
Yeah, it was very hot. And I had forgotten my own hat, so we made this very wide brim of a hat. So I was wearing it as a wide brim hat to keep the sun off my head. And then I realized, this brim is so wide, what if I just made it a plane? So I made it a plane, and here we are with it mostly working as a plane.
Like a B-pack, and it looks almost like a nutball, more or less.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like a...
But with a hat.
Yeah, it's like a square nutball with a top hat sort of sticking...
That's really cool.
Sticking bit awesome. Out of the middle.
So what is that what brought you, because you needed to build this? Is that why you came to Flight Fest?
Well, you could say that, actually, because we weren't going to pay shipping for my brother's new motor, so I took his old motor, and now we're here.
Nice.
We didn't pay shipping, but
awesome.
Here.
So you guys have your whole family kind of getting into this now?
My dad, my right. mom and my dog are home, but my dad's
but
here.
The rest of you guys are all in it.
Yes, we're all
that's
here.
My friend.
The
that's
gang's
your friend,
here.
Right. Yeah,
gang's
that's
all
awesome.
Here.
Really cool. So you're running it on a B-pack
yep.
with a little lemon receiver, looks like.
It's one that I got at a swap meet and crashed on one of my other planes, so I put it on this, figuring that this would be too valuable.
Yeah, if you lose it, then
it is. Yeah,
so we got it to fly today. How'd it go?
It went pretty well. We had some CG issues that you very helpfully resolved. That didn't sound good. Somebody else just crashed behind us. I don't know if it picked it up.
That's the best. Yeah. Okay, welcome to Flight Fest.
Yeah. But, yeah, cool. Had some CG issues. Now it works.
Nice.
Mostly. Thank you.
Well, good. Yeah. Well, thank you for talking to me a little bit. And, this is why we come to Flight Fest, because this kind of stuff.
For crazy, crazy little things.
And that looks like a giant-sized Kraken with extra wings.
That is a giant Kraken.
With a double motor, so.
And the collapsed nose gear.
Yeah, it sucks. Well, the nose gear looks like it'll be fixable.
Maybe not.
I don't know.
Did it just rip it off?
Yeah.
Perfect.
It looks like it did.
I can fix that.
Your wings also coming off.
And that's part of what I love about Flight Fest. The answer is always, we can fix that.
Your wings coming off. Yeah, I know.
I know. That's okay.
All right.
Gotta love it.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, guys. All right. Okay. We are in the middle of Flight Fest Central. It's getting to be dusk, and all the night planes are coming out, and the last non-night planes are here. I'm sitting here with Mike. Should I let you introduce this? I'm sitting here with
Yankee 2003.
Yep. Also,
my name's Mike.
Yep.
Perry. That's about it.
Well, where do you come from? Our neck of the woods, right?
I'm a Michigan guy, actually.
Are you?
Born and raised in Michigan. So I'm not. I was actually born in a hospital, like 15 miles from where Uncle Ra Ra lives, and he flies in.
Oh, Uncle Ra Ra!
Yeah, that's what he said. His niece calls him. So
oh my God! Yeah.
From here on out, it's Uncle Ra.
Uncle Ra Ra! Oh my God! He didn't tell me that. Now he's definitely in trouble.
Now everybody knows.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Cool. So I drive through that area when I go home and everything, and it's like right near. I was born in Livonia, actually.
Okay, that's nice. You're out in North Carolina now, right?
Now, yeah.
So you live down near us, roughly.
Yep.
So you got to see this whole journey from beginning to bitter end.
What do you mean journey?
The giant noob.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was exciting, right? When you guys said, hey, come on.
All right. Well, we had an interruption, but anyway, you were saying that the people come with their planes, and they go, what? I don't know why it's not working, but you can help them out.
Well, that's it. You know, so last year I worked a flight line, and I was a little bit like, I don't know if I really have the ability. But I've been flying for a while, so.
Yeah.
But the stuff that you help people with is the people mostly at the beginning.
Right.
Like people like you and I, we really don't need help on the flight line.
Not anymore.
So it's kind of easy to diagnose.
Yeah.
And so you're helping people a lot without having to really know a lot. So it's really kind of
fun.
Yeah,
you're right. I don't know a lot. So you're right.
That's why we didn't have you over there. But.
Nice. No, but you're right. Like, it's a little bit of, like, the thing that we're now used to.
Yes.
It's that simple. And that's part of why I started the podcast was like, there's the things you just forget are so hard.
Yes.
And then you come out to somewhere like here where 50% of the people here are brand new. Mm-hmm. And they're running into those snags all the time. And you're like, oh, yeah, I forgot. That is the thing. If you don't know it, it's really bad.
And the people that come there, a lot of times, will be like a father-son, right?
Right.
So they'll get some kind of kid or whatever. It depends on what they end up buying, whether it was good or bad for them. But they're having troubles with it, and his dad has no idea how to fix it.
Exactly.
So when you can help him get that in the air and get that child in the air, he is so thankful, you know, because you just made...
Their connection better.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's really cool. Kind of fun. And their whole day is.
Yeah, and your whole day is.
Yeah, it's really cool. Oh, yeah. There's reason number X to.
I think if you were going to volunteer, I can't see a better place than a flight line. It's so much fun.
Nice.
If I were to do it again.
Right. Yeah.
I would probably say it was kind of fun that Dan included me, and I think you had a part of that.
Yeah.
Thanks. But.
Well, I knew you were coming. And he's like, oh, I need some people. And I'm like, I know some people who are definitely coming.
Yeah.
And I know you're a good person to bring in there. You know, like, I know you knew your stuff. So when people have questions, you definitely can help them with the building.
At least. Just point them to Ben Harbor.
Yeah, Ben. Hey, Ben's over there. He knows how to do stuff, I think. You know?
Then you got the flight line. If I were to do it again, if I finish. I might just tell Eddie Black I'll just do one. Can I do, like, one session on a Thursday or something.
Yeah.
If I had something else to do. And I'm sure he would accommodate that because they just look
They're pretty flexible. Yeah, but they may be like, oh, I don't know about you getting on a plane or whatever. What happened?
I see Joe walking down the flight line as we speak with his flirting. Is that Tony? No, that's not Tony.
No, it's not Tony. Hold on, we're going to pause for a second. Yep. All right, well, we're back.
Yep.
We got to watch Joe maiden his flirting.
Exciting.
Super
exciting.
And it's even better that I'm here with Mike because Mike has been badgering Joe in a pleasant way to get his flirting just finished already and fly it because it's awesome.
Well, because he likes to help people, he's out there helping on parking, and it's like, hey, I still need to balance that out. I'm like, oh, no. So basically he says, oh, I did all this. I didn't do much except throw some weights in the front, and then he's able to finish it up. For
yeah, because you knew on yours, you're like, yeah, we needed this much. If you want to run a 2200, it needs a 3300 four cell or something. And it's like, well, if you don't have that, you don't have the 2200 like most people have.
So before we were interrupted, Joe's walking down the flight line. We got to see him, and of course, we got to stop because it's so exciting to see it.
And there's the propped prop.
Ah.
It's literally propellers on the end of a giant propeller.
It's like a tricopter.
Right.
Yeah.
So the design is set up so that once it starts spinning, they flatten out, and it actually creates, you can use less power to stay aloft, but you can fly like a tricopter. But if you do it like that, and have maybe one of the motors causing it to spin or whatever.
That is cool.
It it uses far less power to stay aloft.
Yeah. So I was just saying that I've never been here at night. So I haven't seen any of the radiants or anything fly. So this
I saw a bunch of people pulling theirs out, so this will be fun. Yeah, this is that time. It gets to be interesting.
Joe's up again. Look at that. Look at that. He's just...
All right. He's got Jason's son.
He has taken the Flurkin. He's owning it now.
Yeah, and now he's...
Oh,
he's,
man,
he's
so excited.
I just worry because this is where you lose orientation real easy. And this is like... It's like I'm waiting for Dusk to really try the hard things. You know?
Yeah. Well,
I love Joe. And he's actually doing great. He's flying amazing.
He's doing great. And who cares, right? I mean, it's like now you're on your second flight.
Yeah,
it's dark. It's getting
dim.
Really dark.
He needs to get some lights on that thing. He's in trouble.
But he's over there.
Oh, boy.
I'm so happy for him.
That's okay. We'll be fine.
He'll bring it in, I'm sure.
So we're talking about volunteering. And, you know, it is a trade-off of time. But I feel like the volunteering is part of what I get out of the event. It's part of what I enjoy the event. So it's almost like it's not really giving up my time for it. It's just part of what I'm doing at the event.
And quite honestly, as the day went on, the day turned out to be beautiful. So,
oh, my God. I was really worried it was going to rain like the Dickens all day.
Dan's class was Thursday, Friday, so that wasn't an issue. And then I had the volunteering on Friday, Saturday. But the weather was so good, when it was over, I had tons of time to fly.
Right.
All the time I needed to fly. So it wasn't really an issue, but it kind of felt like it was going to be. But it wasn't. Yeah, that is pretty...
I'm just saying...
And the stuff you see here, right?
That's there's so many interesting things to see. I'd have to say they pulled out foam board and you started to see some weird creations again.
Yeah.
I just wish they had started that earlier. Brought more out earlier so people could start on those things.
It's hard to say, you know, not knowing what the numbers are when they run something like this.
Yeah, I suppose.
Like how...
So, okay, what is, you've been here for the whole thing, and it's not over, but so far, what would you say your favorite couple things have been? The things you either, what were you looking forward to most, and then what did you enjoy most?
Looking forward just to flying with everybody. I enjoy that a lot.
Yeah.
And I like, I hadn't flown the Flurkin, and I kind of was, you know, Joe and I were doing that. So it's fun to have that thing that you haven't done yet that you kind of want to do.
Yeah.
Just bring something new.
Yeah.
Do something that you haven't done before, whether it's build a big plane or something you haven't flown or you want to fly.
Yeah.
So that's probably the coolest thing. And then... You know, the cliche, the people.
It's the fact.
It is.
It's the people, man.
You get such a big community of like-minded people.
Yeah.
Very helpful. It is a unique place. It is fun. It's a lot of fun.
And then a lot of it is like, these are people you've interacted with online, kind of faceless mostly. Yeah. And about different things that you're all interested in. And here, there's a good chance you'll meet that person.
Yeah.
You're like, holy cow, I know, that's that stuff. I saw you doing the thing. That's really cool. Hey, I'm that guy who asked you all those questions. And they're like, or vice versa, you're on the other end of that. And well, you're like, oh, cool, because that's really neat, you know?
One of the cool things meeting Uncle Rara is that he said he was flying that Flerken before, and I kind of asked him, hey, would you help me? I'm going to be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he puts up a video on his YouTube channel
right away.
So that was really cool.
And it was a perfect instructional video on how to do the sidearm toss.
Yep. And then today he helped me so much just by launching it the first time, doing the wing thing. And then he had a really good suggestion that why don't I fly it and you toss it?
Right.
Which was, that was brilliant.
Right.
Because then later on I could just do it myself, and that was so helpful. That was excellent.
Right. Yeah, you had the teach, the show, try, go.
And it was all method. Do it. You do great. This part, I'll take care of the launching, and then you take care of the launching, I'll take care of making sure it comes down one piece.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, that was really cool.
That was really cool. And now you got it. Now you got it down. Yeah. I should have had you throw the Flerken. Because you have mastered it now.
I know. No, I mean, you and Joe. I mean, still, it's a lot of things. You and Joe got to do that stuff.
Yeah, we do a bunch of that stuff. But I'm just saying, that would have been fun. I forgot it was new to you. But you were like, you got to do it like this. You know, come on, what are you doing, Matt?
I was telling someone that before, right? Because my thing was, this whole wing.
You flick it,
right?
No, straight arm kind of do this.
So for you guys that can see this, I'm doing it with my hand. But
yeah,
when you work in a flight line, this little kid comes up to me. Did I tell you this already?
No.
With the wing, right?
No.
And he goes, can you launch this for me? And I'm like, not really. I can try. But if you ask somebody else, it's not going to hurt my feelings, right? But he's just a little kid. Can you just do it? Don't worry about it. So I did it, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, okay, maybe I can do this. And then he kept coming up. Hey, can you help me out again? Hey, guess what I'm going to ask? And I think I launched this thing 3 or 4 times that day.
Oh, so, really cool, yeah.
Yeah. So I kind of had a lot of practice.
That the bladed blade, the propped prop, maybe, is going. It's so awesome. It's like a helicopter blade, basically rotating.
Yeah.
But on the end of it are 3 quadcopter blades.
It's almost like those things when you had a kid, except it doesn't have the ring around it, where you pull the string and it go up.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
And just spin down.
Kinda except on the ends are quadcopter motors.
and it doesn't have the ring. I mean, it's a lot like it, but it's nothing like it at all.
That's really cool, though. All right.
So that, but the other thing probably I like a lot here, other than the planes, because I'm just a plane geek. I love planes. I love model airplanes.
What was the favorite plane you saw today? Because there was a lot of weird, unique, and very good scale ones, too.
Well, of course, my top favorite was the 300% Noob Wonder.
Oh, man. Now you're flattering me.
But the second one, when Muttley flew that missile last night, that blew me away. I mean, it's so well done. It's so fantastic. And behind us, like over by the trailer here, Josh Bixler is just laughing, and he pulls out his phone, and he's recording it as it's going around.
Oh,
I mean, it made a huge impact. Everybody loved it.
That's perfect, because that's what Ethan wanted so bad. And he's like, I just want people to see what's possible and, like, just get inspired to do stuff. And so that's cool. That's really...
Yeah, he's a good person.
He is such a good guy.
I like him.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole separate conversation. That's why we camp with him.
Yeah, we're not picking favorites. We're not here to pick favorites.
No. I think if we could, we'd have everybody all together. Just hanging out all the time. But, yeah, man. Okay, so what would you say to somebody who hasn't come here yet? I mean, what would you... Would you want to convince them or just say, just get out to a fun fly in your local zone?
I'm not a big convincer. And it's probably because my wife overhypes everything.
Oh.
So if there's like a good movie, I'd say something like, "Hey, you should go see that movie." Oh my gosh, that's the best movie in the world, and you go, they've already ruined it, right?
Yeah, so right. You're expecting the best.
Yeah.
At the rate they're hyping it, and then you get there and you're like, oh. This is a good movie.
So I'd say it's worth going to for sure,
mm-hmm.
and challenge yourself, right?
Yeah.
Challenge yourself to meet people. Go meet you guys, right?
Yeah.
Go hang out for a little bit. Ask them to spot your airplane or whatever. And mm-hmm. then fly something that you haven't flown before. Make it weird. Like I was talking to Richard.
Yeah.
And I thought what would be really cool next year is if I could bring an EDF, because I have never flown it.
Yeah, you definitely need to.
Something that's...
You and me, we're going to be flying EDFs together.
And Richard, he's...
Yeah, it's tough to fly with Richard across in California, but we would.
Before then, Roy.
Yeah, but you and I'm saying in between. Yeah. We'll get a couple ready.
That could be a noob thing too, right?
I've got a 90mm EDF that is in a jet that I need to do the buttoning up and just go.
So I saw one of the cool things. I have a Bronco kit left, right? Because I have never built it.
Right.
And a guy had that EDF Bronco, that double EDF.
Yeah, okay.
That was a screamer, man, and that just looked amazing. Probably doesn't, I don't know, it can't be more than 70 millimeters under each wing, but that thing was moving.
No, probably. That's probably all it was. So nice.
Maybe something like that.
Yeah. Sounds like a good plan. I'm really terrible at ending things. That's why Joe always takes us out. But, Mike, thank you so much for sitting down and talking with us and coming out and spending more time. And this is awesome.
I really appreciate this weather, right?
This weather is perfect today.
It's cool.
It started out raining and overcast and kind of like, I don't know. And the forecast was, it could be awful.
We got some clouds. We got a little bit of sun going down. We got some planes with lights, some radiance. Sitting out in front of the flight line.
At like 78 degrees or 74 or something. That's perfect.
Yeah. Just like North Carolina. Just like home.
Where do you live? Because it's not like that where I live. I live in the heat depression of North Carolina.
Country. I live in God's country.
Well, isn't that all in North Carolina?
It is.
Anyway. Thanks again, Mike. I appreciate it.
So this is Joe standing here with Richard Spitfire 76, just chilling and watching Mike Yankee 2003 work on repairing his plane after our Wonder Jumble. But Richard, how are you enjoying Flight Fest?
Oh, brilliant. Absolute brilliant.
Yeah? Good time?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, this is the first time here in Ohio.
Right.
My very first Flight Fest was Flight Fest West. But that was back in 2017.
That's right. They don't do them out there anymore.
No, they don't. No, that was the last one they did in the West Coast. And but at the time I hadn't built any planes, so I bought my first speed build kit from that Flight Fest.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And that's how I started. And now my house is
full
of foam board planes, as my wife keeps telling me.
She's a sweetheart, I'm sure.
She is. She let me come to this.
She let you? Yeah, mine too.
She might be listening to this as well. Okay.
So you joined in the first Wonder Jumble that we did while ago?
Yep.
So how was your Wonder flying?
Interesting.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, I completely lost sight of my Wonder.
Okay.
And apparently it wandered. The Wonder wandered. over into the camping area.
Oof.
And but somebody brought it back, and they found it. And
I heard it was a flight boss.
It was.
It's got to be a little awkward. Yep, that's mine. Sorry about that.
He wasn't too severe with me.
Nah. They're generally not.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they didn't have the air horns going off when it went out.
Yeah,
I guess somebody wasn't watching.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the tricky thing is, you know, it's kind of the first time I've had... There's so many planes up in the air at the same time.
Right.
They all look similar.
Yeah, they do.
And so trying to identify which one is yours after you've taken your eyes off it for any, you know, split second is pretty tricky.
Yeah, we kind of messed everybody up when it was like, okay, we're launching out by the beans, but now let's walk backwards as we're flying.
Right. It was when I was walking back is when it happened, you know. But it's not damaged. No one was hurt. No one suffered any injuries.
There you go. You gonna put yours in combat at some point, or are you just gonna keep it pretty?
I can't take it back on the plane with me because now it's built. I'll have to leave it here if it does survive, or put it into combat.
There you go. Well, if it survives, you can give it to somebody.
Well, that's true. Yeah, I'll donate it.
Yeah. Or, yeah, if they want to put it up in the rafters here somewhere.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
I'm sure they can be found something to do with it.
Yeah, because in order to fly over here, I had to sort of partially build it and then pack it into my luggage. And then I put it together this morning. And
yeah, so I saw that with your Bristol M1. Was that the other one you brought?
No, I bought the Bloody Brit.
Okay, the Brit.
Yeah, which is it's kind of a variant. It's one of Dan's variants of the Bloody Baron.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you were able to cut the wings in half and not have them glued to the body.
Yeah,
did you also put the fuses in the same suitcase?
Yeah, the fuse worked okay. That was short enough. It was just the wing was a little bit too long. In one piece. So I just cut it, did a bit of surgery on it. And then I put a stick in it, one of those popsicle sticks, I think. Yeah. And as acted like a spar. And then I just slot it together, similar to what you did with the big Wonder.
Yeah, the giant Wonder with the carbon fiber, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then just put a load of glue and some tape. Tape around it, tape around the wings, and that's it. And then it was fine. Well,
yeah.
I mean, that same sort of thing with that. I mean, the wings on this one, on the Wonder, are already separate anyway. But,
right.
But yeah, the Baron I had to, the Brit rather, I had to just cut the wing in half. But I installed all the servos, radio, everything I possibly could, so the only thing I had to do was glue stuff together. And
it worked out well for you.
Yeah. Apart from that little incident with the when I lost sight of it,
so is there anything in particular you're hoping to see or do at this Flight Fest that since you came all the way out?
I mean, I'm volunteering tomorrow and Friday. No, Friday and Saturday, I'm on the schedule to help out in the build tent. So I think that'd be fun because I tend to build more than I fly. So I might be, wandering, I guess, around the build tent, helping people with the hot glue guns and stuff.
Make sure they're taking their props off.
Making sure they're taking their props off.
Paying attention to their batteries. Well, good.
Yeah. So that'd be nice, just to help out there. And then this morning was the Blue Angels.
Yeah, I got to see them fly.
I got to see them fly, and that was fantastic. I mean, it's amazing that those jets, they really fly like jets.
Yeah.
And, they just look like, few thousand-dollar planes, in the air. And they're all made out of foam board.
Did you see where Rara Brian was out there flying his
No,
in there?
No, he told me about it. He told me about the, I think he's crashed, didn't he?
Yeah. It was... I didn't see the crash itself. I saw the aftermath.
Oof. Yeah. Right.
All right. Well, there's Matt. Yeah. I need to serve him up the sandwich I brought for him.
All right.
So thanks for joining.
Yeah. No problem.
Appreciate you coming on.
And
Hey there. I'm here with...
Sean Killen.
Sean Killen. I talked to you, was it Friday night?
It was
Wednesday? Wednesday night.
Wednesday night, almost at midnight or whenever I got the tent put together.
Right, and then they turned on the lights for the build tent, and we both were like, oh, cool, like moths to a flame. We're like, well, what's all this about?
It's full of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And so we talked, and I talked a little bit earlier, we talked about what you and I talked about, and that you were kind of, this is your first time being here, first time kind of like, hey, we watch all the videos, let's come down and see what this thing is all about. You've been here for 3 days with your family. How's it been?
This is an incredible family experience. If anybody's never been to Flight Fest, you have to come here. If you can't make it for the full 3 or 4 days, even if you get here for a day, that's the great thing about it is that they charge you one fee for camping for the entire time.
Right.
But if you make it for a night, it's like, I'm not sure what next year is.
A fraction.
But a fraction, yeah. But It's if you like camping, if you like RVing, the facilities, the support that you get, people like Matt, people like Joe that I met, anybody here is so willing to help you to understand the hobby.
Yeah.
We're completely new to it. We came in, first day, my son with lots of help, but all the build he did pretty much by himself with assistance from one of the volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
Built a basically what's called a Bloody Baron, looks like a Red Baron.
Yep.
But it's just a monoplane.
Yeah.
But it's got some power to it. And so we're so excited about what we're going to be able to learn about calibration and other things going forward.
Mm-hmm.
He was hooked watching the videos, but he's so much more hooked to this now.
Seeing it in person and being part of it.
Yeah. And it's...
Yeah. You know, I was going to say, did you guys get like one of the easy kits?
Yes.
Which did you guys start with? Like really having him fly with?
So we started first
day. You started with the Bloody Baron because what happened in the beginning of the day.
Yeah, we signed up for the Bloody Baron. We built that and spent the entire day, got some assistance from some folks in Idaho that we met.
Okay, cool.
And not volunteers, but just other people that were here.
Yeah.
We happened to sit up next to their table and they were great help. Getting things kind of up and running, getting some of the electronics and some of the servos all set up.
Yeah.
The servos are just these motors that basically drive the control surfaces for the aircraft.
Yeah.
And so, but once you start understanding all the different things that make flight possible through all the connections.
Yeah, all the how the electronics go together and how they work to actually do the things that you need to create lift and thrust and all the stuff that everybody talks about. And they're like, that's just how an airplane works. And you're like, well, yeah, but how does that happen, really?
Yeah. And getting it to happen correctly, because you could have a motor that just makes a servo, you know, the servo basically moves back and forth, but how do you calibrate the servo to be in the right place so it moves something like a rudder?
The way you want.
The right way to the left and the right way to the right.
Yeah, yeah.
The correct proportions. So otherwise, if you do the controls, things can go out of control. So,
especially when you're new.
Yeah, so we started with the build for that, but if you're all new to getting here, they have a thing called the Easy Fun Factor, Easy Power Pack.
Yep.
Easy Power Pack comes with three planes. We did the build kit that has the three planes. It comes with a freighter, comes with a...
All
you need, basically the remote for both the freighter, and also comes with a remote for...
Oh, it has a separate remote. So is that the freighter is a separate thing, and then they have a separate pack that has all the guts and three plane kits to build three different planes to put that second pack into.
Yep. And then volunteers will help to get you to build three of those different planes. The planes they provide for free in the actual builds, but you can buy the kit as part of a package. I think we got the package for under $100 for...
It's like $50.
For four planes, almost everything you need. Maybe we just need AA batteries.
Oh, yeah, for $100 for the whole enchilada. Yeah,
yeah, so a great...
I saw you in the STEM tent because I'm a STEM tent volunteer.
Yeah.
So I saw you and your family in there a bunch. Now, how did that experience kind of help you in that journey? Help you at all, or was it...
It helped immensely. One thing that's definitely good to check out, they have a design build challenge.
Yes.
Which, after you've gone through the process of creating one of these planes that they build, which it could be like a Mustang or it could be almost any build of any type of airplane, then you get to build your own airframe from your own design of different things provided. So imagine cooking shows where they give you different ingredients
and
you
make Iron Chef.
So it's like Iron Chef, but it's Iron Chef airplane. So
airplane edition, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, cool. So the thing is that nobody's going to taste your airplane when you're done. You're going to actually fly your airplane and test it out to see what's good and what's bad. So you get some tweaking to do.
And then at the end of that, they give you like a little mission, like pop a balloon or whatever it was, right?
Yeah, in this case, with this one, they actually let you just build something and then work on getting the balance right.
Yeah.
Getting all of the adjustments for the, everything for the airframe to work. Power, balance. Really, but it's a wonderful experience.
So how did that really help you guys start to understand? Did it help you understand what was going on with the airplane? So that when they're like, no, you really need to balance this, you're like, oh yeah, we do, because this is what happens when you don't, right? Like
exactly.
You got to see it small scale,
safely.
And then you're like, okay, now we go back to the Bloody Baron build that we had. And I was like, oh, okay, now I see why this is so important, right? Like,
yes, you can see where any control surface on an entire airplane has any issue, how that can affect the entire flight. So you have to have everything just right for the entire thing to be controllable. And right. you start to understand and appreciate everything that's out there that you've ever flown on for commercial or private airplanes.
Yeah, for sure.
That you've been airborne and stayed airborne because somebody really took the time.
Right, to make sure it will always be right.
Yes.
Right. So how does that translate to now we walk out to where we're sitting here next to the flight line as it's about to get into nighttime officially. And, you know, those planes, you saw to the last two or three days, crazy builds. I mean, builds that are all over the place as far as looking like a real plane, flying like a real plane, and then nowhere like it, right? Like some things you're like, that shouldn't fly, and there it is.
Yes, there's things called nutballs, which is imagine like an oval.
A paper plate. With the sides tilted up.
Yeah, tilted up. So it's kind of like a dish that's been warped a bit, and it's got motors, and it's got a rudder, and they can hover. And they can hover and spin in one place. Highly maneuverable, and some of those ended up being the last one in the air in some of the great battles we got to see the last couple
of days. They're so lightweight. They sip on the battery to do all those things. Yeah. Compared to other planes, they're a lot heavier. But, yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
So what was your favorite thing? So now that you've kind of been, this isn't quite the end, but it's pretty close. Yeah. What would you say your takeaways are, the top couple things that you guys really enjoyed, as much as, like, meeting people is what I hear a lot, watching your kids just light up and find a passion.
Yeah.
Weren't sure there was going to be one.
Well, right? I knew there was a passion already. I'm excited about the future, either as a hobby or possible profession in the future, that mm-hmm. he has that much interest in it, and that there's the group of people that you can meet with every year to have this great family experience. The family experience has been wonderful in that you get to be not just on vacation, but you're on vacation doing something very constructive and highly, very educational.
Yeah.
And then knowing that it's, you know, if they keep doing it every year, and knowing that there's other groups like the AMA and other folks that are out there that mm-hmm. are these groups that you can join, that you have this community of support across the country.
Yeah.
Folks like you doing podcasts that we're definitely going to check out now that we know.
Yeah, please. Yeah, we would love that. But, you know, and then like we do are that kind of support in that. We do monthly builds where we all get online and we build. And if you're building something, pull us up to your table, and we'll chat, shop.
Yep.
Which is, I don't know, to me, that's the indispensable part. I love it. And a lot of people who do that and feel like, oh, this is what I needed.
Yep. So it's like Flight Fest. It's just a revisit like every month that gives you a chance to reconnect.
Just like on a small scale.
Yeah.
You know, but it's fun. So, okay, let's see. So you've been here for a couple days. What would you say to somebody... in a couple words, like what would you say to a family who's seen the videos and thinking about it? And is there any advice you would give them on their you know, before they head out?
I would say don't hesitate to sign up to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Try to block out as many days as you can be here, because being here for multiple days gives you that much more support, gives you that feedback loop of once you've designed something or have something built, to find out things that are issues with something you've built, find out what's wrong with it, and that learning process. If you're here for 24 hours, you might build something and then leave and then miss out on that opportunity to get the information that you know, to ask the right questions and to ask to get support.
Yeah.
So being here for multiple days, it's, I think, in terms of the length of time, you know, we're excited about going back home. We'd love to have it be lasting a couple more days, but the length of time is just right. I would say.
Yeah.
You know, it gives you a block of time where it's pre-weekend, weekends.
Yeah.
But it's just a really great experience. And if you can sign up to be here, you know, either even if you're driving distance to make it here for a day, even just to check out things for a day.
Yeah. Seen a number of people who come in and check it out and go, oh, neat. I didn't know it was going to be like this.
Yeah. You'll love the experience.
Yeah.
And so highly recommend it.
What would you say to somebody who's thinking about going? What advice would you give to them before they head out?
Just to plan ahead, maybe pull your camp stuff down early. That's what we already did with some of our stuff, getting ready to head on the road earlier.
Yeah.
And give yourself, you know, plenty of rest the night before to be able to get on the road to get home. So.
Nice. Good plan.
And if they have anything to say, doing the podcast.
Family just walked up. No, we're good.
If you all want to say what you'd like to say.
Oh, that's fine.
Anything else you want to say about Flight Fest?
Okay.
Oh, it's awesome. Yeah. Yeah, it is absolutely amazing.
Okay.
Wonderful people. So friendly.
Yeah. Getting the kids' opinion too, so they love being here. So.
Yeah, thanks. That's and that says it right there. Yep. It's awesome. Yeah, really cool. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Matt.
And we will talk to you soon. I mean, hopefully you join our community and we'll be chatting with you in and out for the next year until we get to this crazy place and we'll see you again.
Yep. 365 days or minus a couple.
A little bit less. 360-ish?
Yeah.
Awesome. Bye. Cool. Thanks
a lot.
All right. That'll wrap up the last of the Flight Fest audio we've got. That should be everybody, and I want to put out a thank you to everybody who spent time with us to, you know, give us the time to sit down with him or just stand around with him and record those bits. It was new for us, but it was also cool. I know that not everybody we spoke to listens, but for anybody who does, thank you. We enjoy talking with you, and hopefully all you guys have enjoyed hearing other perspectives on what was going on out there. I don't have anything else for tonight. Do you, Matt?
No, this is all we need to talk about. I think we just need to line up some guests and some history segments. If we do find a guest who wants to talk about some of the more intricate things of, like, programmable servos, we may address this issue again with a guest. But we're at the limits of our knowledge for sure. I don't think we can help you past this, at least not yet. But how else? So let's run down the out stuff, talk about where people can reach us and how they can learn more about the show and what we are and what we do and all that stuff. Would you mind doing that, Joe?
Yeah.
You do it so well.
I do it all right. Guys, as always, thank you so much for tuning in and listening. We hope you have enjoyed listening to this episode as much as Matthew and I have enjoyed having the conversation. Impassioned and frustrating as it can be. Feel free to reach out to us. Feel free to reach out to us. You can reach us on our Discord server. Links will be down in the doobly-doo, as it were. You can visit us there. You can link up with us on our Facebook page. Swing by the website, aviationrcnoob.com. You can email us, Matthew@aviationrcnoob.com, or me, Joe@aviationrcnoob.com, or you can email us both, aviationrcnoob@gmail.com. I feel like I used to have more that I said. Another thank you to our patrons who continue to help keep the lights on, and at this point are sustaining the lights, so that's nice. I know Matthew appreciates that.
Yep, we just re-upped for 3 more years of our web service, so I appreciate that it didn't punch a hole in my budget.
So you're saying we got to do this for at least 3 more years?
We need to have a website for 3 more years. But well, I'm hoping, guys, we get to do this for 3 more years. Honestly, this is a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, here's to the next 3 years, and thank you for tuning in. We'll catch you guys next time.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, I forgot to talk about me tanking the vampire into dirt. Enough to bust the nose completely up. Oh, boy. What a mess.